As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, brought to you by The Athletic. My name is John. With me is my cold, but also Mike.
Hello, John. Happy Easter to you and your cold.
Thank you for the chocolate. That's helping it get a little bit better. And Colin.
Good afternoon.
Oh, Colin. Yeah. It was a draw. Watford did not lose. Watford have just drawn away at Middlesbrough. And we didn't do a podcast after the Sheffield Wednesday game where we won 1-0 at home. Now, Mike, this is like the old days. The early adopters are From the Rookery End. We'll remember that we only used to do podcasts once a month. And we used to talk about four games in a row. Now we only talk about two, but it's really old school. Really, really old school. I love it. But it is 4 points out of the possible six. 2 games after an international break where several key players were travelling, were out and about and were playing lots of games of football. But we're still second and things are still very good. Mm. Anything to grumble about, Mike? Should we get this out of the way?
Well, no, look, I mean, I said when we reconvened, you know, in my head, I thought, looked at the fixtures and thought 4 points from these two games, bearing in mind we're coming off the back of an international break, I think would have represented a good return because, you know, we had to beat Sheffield Wednesday at home and then anything really we get at Middlesbrough, I felt would be not a bonus, but I think if we could pick a point up there, not avoid defeat, that keeps momentum going. It's another point in the bag. A very, very tough side to play against. You know, Neil Warnock's side, you know, he's a canny, canny operator. Love the fact on the stat that they did on the Sky commentary that Neil Warnock has been a manager for as long as Cisco Munoz has been alive. So he knows some stuff and he knows how to set up a side. He knows how to get the best out of his side. And he made it very, very difficult for Watford at the Riverside, didn't he? They nullified the front three for the first time, really, in this spell we've had. So, to a degree, fair play to Borough. But Watford have got 4 points. They've kept the momentum going. That's another point that our rivals have to make up on us. The game itself, I'm disappointed in as much as, really, they were two pretty average performances. The return of 4 points, I think, is perfectly acceptable. It's absolutely fine. So that's okay. And you just hope that they can build and get a bit of their swagger back because there wasn't much of it either against Sheffield Wednesday on Friday or we're speaking today on Monday against Middlesbrough. They were two very... Just the tempo wasn't there. The swagger we've had against in other performances wasn't there. So my only slight nagging doubt is, you know, we need to just, you know, shake this off. Despite, you know, it's 4 point haul is decent. It's absolutely fine. But we do need to get our mojo back a little bit, I think, on the next Friday against Reading.
Yeah, Colin, you know, today felt like not quite enough of a performance to win. And Friday, felt like we just did enough to win, even though we weren't really being threatened by Sheffield Wednesday. You know, they weren't creating, you know, thousands of chances and peppering the box with worrying crosses. The performances felt like we were still in third gear.
Well, they did a bit. I think actually the success of Friday with the performance we put in then had a sort of, maybe you might argue, a negative effect on today's performance. We found ourselves in exactly the same position, 1-0 up, and we played kind of with that very relaxed sort of, we're in control, we pass the ball back and forth. Hughes, again, the kind of the go-to guy in the middle of the park, picks the ball up, recycles it back to Serralta, back to Akong out wide, to Messina and Kiko, and it comes back in. And we seemed to be so in control. And because that had worked for us on Friday, I think we tried to repeat the trick, but we were playing against very, very different opposition. Sheffield Wednesday didn't really offer much. I will say this, it's funny when you get to the end of the season, a run in like this, I'm sure that Swansea will be feeling the opposite from us. But, you know, the goal we scored against Sheffield Wednesday was a goal that could easily have been ruled out under different circumstances. The ball comes across to Ismail Assar, for those who haven't seen it, a fantastic crossfield pass from Messina, who's really growing in his distribution. And they're complaining that Sar's offside when the ball is hit. No idea, didn't have the camera angle to see whether that was true or not. Anyway, the linesman didn't give it. And then he gets the ball down, plays a wonderful cross between defender and goalkeeper, and success is coming in at the back stick. He is offside, and the defender sticks it in the back of his goal. He's flagged offside, and then the ref goes over and they have a chat, and he goes, well, he wasn't interfering with play, didn't touch the ball, therefore it's a goal and it's given. Now, that's when you get that kind of little, those tiny little bits of luck, you feel, oh, maybe this is our season. You know, maybe this is the way that it's going to happen for us. You know, the gods are on our side, if you like. And today, again, I thought the goal we scored, he wasn't offside. Clearly, he wasn't offside, Sar, when the ball was kicked by Zinchenko. But there was a hint of handball from Zinchenko. It bounced up and off his arm, and they were appealing, and everyone was furious. And then, of course, Sky sort of pile in with their, oh, it's a controversial incident. It's really very uncontroversial. It was just a straightforward, he was onside, there wasn't a handball, it came off his ankle and went in. It's unlucky for them, it's lucky for us. I was thinking, oh, is this how it is, you know? And then I thought we fell back into the same kind of performance that we'd had against Sheffield Wednesday, and perhaps that was really a mistake. We did have one or two chances, one very good chance in the second half with João Pedro to get that second goal, but we didn't play, as Mike rightly says, we didn't play at a high enough tempo, we didn't play with the intensity we've seen in recent weeks, we weren't able to put the game to bed. We gave away, well, Mike will give you the stat in a minute, we gave away a lot of set pieces, and eventually one of them told. And for that, I feel disappointed, but equally, like Mike, going into these two games, when we talked about it on the last podcast, I think it was called The Running, we talked about getting 4 points from these two games, and that we'd be happy with that. So it's hard to be really disappointed. But having been 1-0 up, you know, with 30 minutes to go, you think, come on, lads, put this game to bed. And we weren't able to do that, and that is disappointing. And, of course, it will give encouragement to both Swansea and Brentford.
I totally understand what you're saying, Colin, about the bits of luck and those slight little bits of fortune falling our way. Just to go back to the Sheffield Wednesday game and goal, I think he puts that, I think Lees makes that, the Sheffield Wednesday defender makes that challenge, makes that attempt to play the ball regardless of success being there, because he knows full well that it's a dangerous ball in, and that we earned that goal through quality.
Yeah.
So the beautiful ball from Semmer, it was a magnificent ping. Saar did his thing down the right, and every time he does it, you think, right, if he gets a bit of open space in front of him, you know there is a question about to be asked of the defence. If we know it, the defenders will have spent all week watching horrifying video of him running at a million miles an hour and fizzing balls across the box, they will know it as well. He was left with absolutely no option other to try and to do something with that ball, and with if success is there or he's not, he makes the same challenge, and the net result is the same. So I know that wasn't the point you're making, but what I'd like to bring it back on that is, we have the quality, and we have the quality that defenders can't really live with in this division. And I think after a game like today, when we feel a little bit flat, which is incredible really, to think the run we're on and a draw away at Middlesbrough is cause for disappointment. I think tells us how far we've come and what a tremendous season this is shaping up to be. I think we just need to take stock. Remember that there is quality all over this pitch, and it only takes a little bit of genius. One, you know, for Sarr to get away once, Pedro to turn them inside out once, Semmer to flash one in from the edge of the box, Zinchenko, who's looking like he's more willing to shoot. There's quality everywhere, and that's where we earned that goal and win against Sheffield Wednesday.
And we earned it today that way. João Pedro chasing down the ball. He kept going. He kept trying. It bounced the right way. Zinchenko. We made that opportunity. And in fact, the whole running up to that goal, it was like we were being very pedestrian about the whole game. But they just made their substitution. And we sort of just upped it just a little bit. And just by upping it a little bit, things started to happen. And then it went back a step again. And we weren't sort of keeping up that high intensity. And it does seem like that's a choice. That's a definite choice by the players or by the manager that we aren't going to go at this 100 miles an hour at this point, because there's still a lot of the season to go.
We have the possession, and we count on our quality to make it count, and we keep the ball. You know, you look at the pass stats, look at the amount of possession. We always play more passes and we always have more of the ball. And it's, you know, it's quite remarkable, really, isn't it, to see us knock the ball around the way we do. And for the reasons I've just talked about, and the reasons that are evident to all of us that have been watching the side in the last couple of months, we know it doesn't take much. That if we've got the ball, it only takes one pass and the whole thing's open for us. You know, if Kiko gets in and then there's an overlap for Sarr, or over the other side, Semmer can beat a man. So keeping the ball, and there isn't any need necessarily for it to be an absolute kitchen sink job, because I don't think that's when we're at our best. I think that there's a difference between, you know, really high. It's difficult. I'm not quite sure the best way to articulate it. Once we're purring, it looks effortless, and it's about moving the ball quickly and finding the space. And I think Sheffield Wednesday did an okay job of it in terms of restricting us. We did sort of, they moved around. Of course, we had Isaac's success through the middle from the start on Friday against Sheffield Wednesday, and you know, the ball didn't stick with him as well as he would have liked. And they tried. They moved. They switched flanks occasionally. Sarr and Pedro moved over against Sheffield Wednesday and tried to unlock it that way. It didn't quite come off against Sheffield Wednesday, but I think today against Middlesbrough, I think it's credit to them. The way they set up, they really stifled it, and there was very, very little room for us to play into. We couldn't find those angles. We couldn't find those pockets of space. We couldn't get the zippy little passes that have undone so many teams before Middlesbrough going today. And I think you have to give credit to Middlesbrough, their players, and Warnock for obviously understanding what the threat was going to be and largely nullifying it. Now, they didn't create much themselves either, in the same way as Sheffield Wednesday, which again, I think should be cause for us to be confident and relatively content. You know, we are not struggling defensively against these teams. We are not finding ourselves up against it really in any game at the moment, if we're perfectly honest about it.
But if we were going to go back to before this greatness started, and we looked at what our problem was, it wasn't the defence at that point. It wasn't the midfield at that point. It wasn't being used in the right way. But then the worry always was, were we going to score enough goals? The big question I've sort of got over these last two games is, are we going to have enough goals if we were to find ourselves not being the first scorers? Is João Pedro going to last as long as we want? Is Isaac's success the answer in his current situation, his current form? Is Andre Gray getting enough times to also develop himself and to make sure he's match sharp? Didn't come on today. You know, if things had gone as we thought they were going to go with João Pedro after going off hobbling, I mean carried off almost, after the Sheffield Wednesday game, you that is sort of a massive worry that will be our downfall, that we don't score enough goals.
I don't think we're there yet, to be honest with you.
No, we're not there yet. But you know,
worry about that.
That's
at
a nagging.
The moment.
It's a nagging.
I think Mike has it right. Basically, I think that what Warnock did. Let's remember how experienced Warnock is, not just as a manager, but a manager in the Championship. And he set them up with three centre backs who didn't spread out wide. They sat in the penalty box. It was barely you could put a Rizla between the three of them. And then he had his wing backs who were willing to work really hard. And as a team, they worked incredibly hard, and they pressed and pressed and pressed and continued to do so in the second. second half. Now, not many teams have done that to us in recent weeks because perhaps they've been slightly too nervous playing against us and have dropped off and dropped off. But they really put us under a lot of pressure. They won the ball off us. It's one of the reasons they got so many set pieces, because if you don't press a team in their own third, you're not going to get those fouls. And I don't know what the stat was. I think Mike said we gave up 15 free kicks and five corners or something. So if a team plays like that against you, they're showing a bit of spirit, a bit of courage. Obviously, they've still got a chance of getting in the playoffs. And I thought they really did that to us. But in terms of worrying about our goal scoring, you're right in that we didn't look as dangerous in the last two games. We didn't create as many chances as in previous games. But that's what kind of happens at the end of the season when the pressure starts to build. I'm sure Swansea and Brentford fans would say, well, we haven't created enough chances. We're not scoring goals anymore. You know, let's not forget Swansea have lost three in a row. Brentford have drawn three in a row. We haven't done that. We've won two and drawn one so far. And the quality is there. I say Mike is absolutely right. Like the move for the João Pedro chance was just the most, one of the most beautiful things. Ball comes in, goes to Chalobah to Semmer. Semmer looks up, puts in the perfect ball to Pedro, who hits it first time, and it just creeps outside the far post. You know, it's that kind of movement, that kind of fast passing, that sort of tempo that we didn't do enough of today to create enough chances to get that second goal. We can't rely on taking every single chance we make. But, you know, we've still got all of that in the locker, plus Gray, plus success. I still feel calm and confident. We're 10 points ahead of both those teams. They've got two games in hand, obviously, but they've got to win those, which is difficult to do at this stage in the season. They both proved that it's difficult to do it. We proved it was hard to do it today against a really tough Borough side. Mike called it really last week, saying, you know, that's a tough game. That's going to be one of our toughest games away at Middlesbrough. And he was right. But I still feel like that you've got to take some fatigue. I mean, I think Borough's performance is one thing, but I think you've also got to take fatigue into account a little bit, because they've played twice in 3 days and three or four of those players have come back from international travel. So hopefully this week we can get enough rest. But it's the mental battle now, I think. That's what I feel like it is for Watford. I thought in the second half, once Borough equalised, what was really clear from what happened after that, despite the fact that Borough didn't really create that much, they played like a team with nothing to lose. They put men forward, they pressed us in our own half. They played as if, well, we can just play now because we've got the equaliser and we can play with nothing to lose. And we couldn't really play as if we had nothing to lose, because we knew if we conceded another goal, you know, that was something massive to lose. And so we played as if we did have something to lose, and that slightly rebalanced, or it changed the balance of the game that I was watching anyway in the second half after that equaliser. They came for it because they had nothing to lose. They might as well go for it. And we were like, well, we better protect this point. And so it's the mental game from here on in. It's going to be tough. Some of those players are very young, inexperienced, probably haven't been in a promotion battle before, certainly not at this level. And, you know, that's the thing that I would worry about, the mental strength to keep going, because I think we've got the quality to do it. We've got the players to do it. It's whether or not they can hold their nerve, I think.
I think we're seeing teams understand what the threat Watford poses as well. You know, everyone knows, you know, everyone that's been watching the Championship with half an eye knows that Watford have switched to 4-3-3. They know that the real crux of Watford's performances are Will Hughes, Nate Chalobah recently, and then Ismaïla Sarr and João Pedro. They're the guys that make the whole thing tick. It's not rocket science. And I thought today in particular with Middlesbrough, again with going back to a canny head coach, there'll have been no stone left unturned in terms of their prep. They absolutely bunged up down the right, didn't they? Ismaïla Sarr didn't have really any opportunity to gallop down that right at all. There was no space to be found at all, was there? I didn't think. Part of it is, yeah, obviously the mental pressure is going to come into it. But I think the quality of these guys is as such that's probably less of a issue for them and more an issue for us as supporters watching from the sidelines. I think these guys would back themselves against absolutely everybody in this division.
They're not going to be having the senior team members gathering the players for a big meeting after this game.
No.
But you think they're going to have some conversations just like, look, this is ours. We can do this. We should do this. We need to make sure that it is ours to be able to. We need to keep it as it being ours to win.
I think the issue is we probably need to be a little bit more nimble in situations like today when we're not allowed to. Early on in the season, we said, well, we're desperate for this Watford side to impose themselves. We want them to take hold of the game. I think they were far too passive in the first half of the season under Ivic. It was just all about, you know, just possession and trying to nick a 1-0. That was basically the premise. We've been able to shake those shackles off, largely down to the quality and largely down to defences not being able to cope with this. But we're going to face some sides now in the running. You know, Reading, pretty decent, well organised. Norwich, Brentford, Swansea. You know, they're all okay defensively, and they will set up to nullify us because teams have to do that. We've been going into games not worried about the opposition to a degree because we know basically, and this isn't to decry the opposition, we're better than them. That's just the fact of the matter. That's the reality. The players we can put out are better than the opposition for the most half. So they know they have to work to nullify that. That happened against. To Sheffield Wednesday, a degree. I thought we were very, very comfortable despite the scoreline. Today, there was some clear signs that they were set up to target or to stop. You know, I thought they put us under pressure occasionally. We knock the ball about in front of Backman, don't we? Trusticong and Sierra Alta, they pass it between themselves. And usually they send their body one way, then go take a few steps forward and find a pass. But we know that William Trusticong was great against Sheffield Wednesday. I thought he was probably man of the match in what was probably a better team performance than individuals. But today I thought he gave the ball away again. I thought his delivery was not as good as it has been, which we've seen from him before. And it felt like perhaps, I don't know if that was being targeted a little bit. They closed it down a little bit. And there was a time when the two Borough players collided, going for a poorly hit pass from Trusticong, wasn't it? And I just think we just have to be a bit clever and a bit better at reacting when teams work us out a bit. That's my only sort of slight concern, and that's the sort of the question after today. 1-0 up, they're not really threatening, but their threat is stopping us. So how do we deal with that? And more teams, you know, there's six games to go, they're going to be wanting to stop us. And if they can stop us, then they're always in with a chance of nicking one. And I think we just have to be tactically nimble. And so this is, you know, we talk about the players, Colin, having the mental fortitude and aptitude to deal with the promotion chase. You know, Chisco Munoz has to stand up to his opposite numbers as well when they know what's coming.
He stood up to Colin earlier, Mr. Warnock, should I say. I think they offered him an iPad to see that it wasn't offside. I think there was a little bit there, but I think Cisco sort of had one over Mr. Warnock in the end.
Yeah, I enjoyed their exchange of their frank exchange of views. I enjoyed that. I'd like to talk about the defensive unit. And I know that we feel a little bit let down, and I agree that Trusticong's his one sort of flaw is that he does sometimes misplace a pass. His distribution isn't always great. But since the beginning of March, we've conceded only 3 goals, one of which was today. That unit, I have to say, is sort of the bedrock, isn't it? And I would include Backman and Hughes in that back six. But again, I just saw today, Serralta really stood out as the player that wants to take responsibility for making sure that everything is snuffed out. And Hughes, again, we saw him again playing behind Serralta and Trusticong at times and then coming forward. He's so calm on the ball. When he receives the ball, either from Trusticong or Serralta, even if he's got if he's facing his own goal, he can turn. He can always seems to find a little pocket of space, a little pass just to relieve pressure. And I think that unit is working well. Messina is, as I mentioned earlier, is starting to distribute the ball really well. I think his decision making is good about when to get forward and help Semmer or when to drop back and recognize that there's a threat. Kiko is Kiko. There's no more words really to say about him, as far as I'm concerned. But as a six, including the keeper, you can hear Backman barking orders all the time. I think he's grown in the. I think it's 19 games he's now played in a row for Watford out of the 40 we've played. So, you know, he's clearly got the backing of his coach, which gives him confidence. He's hardly let in any goals, which I think is another massive thing, not just for the keeper, but for all the defenders. And I think if we are to get across the line, I think this defensive unit, these six players that play, and when I include Hughes in that unit. Of course, Hughes also contributes going in the other direction. I appreciate that. But a lot of the work that he does is about picking the ball up off the centre-backs, about distributing it, about staying calm, about protecting them from too much threat. And I think that, you know, when I get nervous about the run-in and I think, oh, and I feel quite nervous right now because I thought we were going to hang on and get those 3 points and go to 81, and you think, oh, we can almost see the finish line. Now I feel a bit more nervous because I realise that if they both win their two games in hand, they're only 4 points behind, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I feel more nervous than I did 60 minutes, let's say. Then I think about those six players and I think about the bedrock on which our season's been built, really, with those players. And that does have a calming effect on me because, you know, we do give up so few real chances. We probably give up one or two a game, which is remarkable really in the Championship, when normally it's sort of pell-mell and balls flying in from all angles and high balls and low balls and all sorts of, you know, crosses and stuff. And yet somehow we manage most of the time to keep teams away from the danger area. And that's really what was disappointing about Semmer's giving up a foul. We'd given up a foul in that area just before the equaliser, which we'd managed to clear. And then within, you know, a few minutes, as they said on commentary, it was really unnecessary for him to throw his foot in there. He wasn't really going anywhere, this player. He had other Watford players around him, but he gave away the foul. That's disappointing. That's not necessary. He should stay out of that and not give up those set pieces, because it looked to me as if Borough, the only way they were really going to score was from a set piece. And yet there we were, giving the ball up in dangerous areas, giving them a chance to hit a dead ball, getting all of their players forward, pretty much. I mean, every single one came forward, as far as I can remember. And, you know, we played a high line against that free kick. In the old days, when I grew up, you put a man on each post and you defended a free kick with your back to your own goal, so you could see what was going to happen. Now the fashion is to play a higher line around the 18-yard line and then run back towards the goal. I always think that makes it much harder to defend. And Bolasie did well. He got in front of whoever it was, whether it was Semmer or whoever it was. He just got in front and got his head to it first. It's a good goal, and a decent ball. But, you know, if we hadn't given away the free kick, we don't give away the equaliser. And it was disappointing. Having said everything positive about that defensive unit, it was a little bit disappointing today that we gave away so many dead balls, set pieces. And that's something I think they're going to have to look at, manage, make sure we don't do that again.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network. This is From the Rookery End.
Yeah, those of you who have listened to the podcast, you know, as we used to say when we used to do one a month, now it's after, well, almost after every single game. Of course, Arlo is a big part of this the podcast family, and it's always nice to hear his views. But today, Michael, we've got a slightly different Michael Parkinson.
Yeah, quite frankly, he's getting a bit too big for his boots. He's fed up of me asking him questions.
Do you know what it is? I saw a picture of him the other day. I know everyone's getting long hair, but he looks like a shabby teenager now because he needs a haircut, doesn't he? I think that's probably the hair is helping him become a little bit more like, you know, I'm a big star, I'm a big rock star. Look at me with my long hair.
Yeah, finding the cigarette butts in the half finished cans of Heineken in his bedroom is a bit of a shame. I must be honest. He wanted to ask someone else the questions instead of answering to his boring old dad. So it's WrestleMania week, basically. The kids absolutely love WWE. And during WrestleMania week, there's lots of opportunities for people to speak to the protagonists, the wrestlers. And Arlo was lucky enough to manage to speak to one of the WWE superstars, as they're known. A guy called Finn Balor. Arlo had his Watford shirt on and took the opportunity to take Michael Parkinson sort of on the road, I guess, really.
Mike's surname is Parkin, his son called Arlo, and this is our feature, Michael Parkinson.
Hi, Finn.
Is that a Watford jersey you have on?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
What football team do you support, and do you think Watford will get promoted this year?
I hope Watford get promoted. I have a soft spot for Watford, and I am a top Watford fan.
Good luck at TakeOver, and I hope you keep the belt.
Thank you, Arlo. All right, good luck for Watford. I hope they get promoted.
Me too.
All right.
Bye.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
So Arlo speaking to WWE superstar Finn Balor there. Now, if you are after more things to fill your time during this lockdown, because we're not quite finished yet, you can, of course, subscribe to The Athletic. Yes, that's theathletic.com/rookieend, where you can sign up. There's always a deal. The current deal is $3.99 a month for your first 6 months. That's a 40% discount on the normal subscription. And by doing that, you will get every sports story that matters. All the breaking news, in-depth analysis from the world-renowned team of journalists. And of course, you can get this podcast ad-free if you subscribe and you listen via the website or via the Athletic app. No adverts whatsoever. Of course, you can keep up to date with all the Watford writing from Adam Leventhal. So to do that, remember, go to theathletic.com/rookieend and sign up for an offer of $3.99 a month. That's if you're in England. And there might be a different offer for you if you're somewhere else in the world. But if you'd like to have something physical to read, but there's a couple of publications to keep an eye out for, and they all come from the Watford Treasury team. The first one is the Watford Treasury. There's a new edition out this week. So go to thewatfordtreasury.co.uk where you can subscribe. And of course, they don't just do the every couple of months visual history magazine, which is the Watford Treasury. They also do a monthly fanzine, yellow, black and red, YBR. We've got a special little clip here, voiced by Colin, written by Ollie Wicken. This is in issue 9 of YBR, and it's all about where Ollie Wicken describes the 2020-21 football experience for Watford fans.
15 minutes to kick off. Nerves kick in. Will the Wi-Fi be stable this afternoon? 10 minutes to kick off. Time for my lucky pre-match ritual. Use left hand to clear coffee mugs from desk. Worked last time. Ready to savour the atmosphere. Slight whiff of last night's takeaway, plus the dogs farted. Open a window. And close windows. Twitter, Facebook, the forums. Not during the game, thanks. Briefly revisit memories of recent matches. What's the Hive Live URL again? What's my login again? Flashback to paying 50p at the Vicarage Road turnstile as a kid. Remember that? But not my credit card number. Have to fetch my wallet. Hear the wife get home. She'll want to talk. Headphones on. Team news. Probably the usual, with two rotations. Why does Emma Saunders always call it the all-important team news? Kickoff. Not feeling much. Looking at a computer screen. What I do all day, every day. Phone pings a notification. Have we scored? Have they scored? Hate lagging behind real time. Live games used to be live. Read the notification. Team news from BBC Sport. An hour late. Can't have been all important, I guess. Tap a comment to the WhatsApp group. Eyes off the game. Watching football feels like multitasking. Our centre-backs pass back and forth. Why? The camera never reveals the wider picture. Two replays of a nothing incident while players in progress. Suddenly we're defending a free kick outside our box. How come? Half time. Go outside. Take a leak in the rain against the garden wall. Just to pretend I'm actually experiencing football. Full time. 3 points. Shut computer. Job ticked off. That's another elephant washed, as my boss used to say. All told, nothing to write home about. I'm always home anyway. In 4 days, I'll do the same. In 4 months, football may feel real.
It's great, that clip, isn't it? And it really sums up so much of what our experience has been of not going to live games, but having to sort of watch them on various platforms on our laptop, using our phone hotspot in the car, so that we can watch it while we're being driven to relatives or whatever over the Easter weekend, and whether your Wi-Fi is going to be good enough. Anyway, I had a chat with Ollie, and I wanted to see if he wanted to come over and watch the game today in our back garden, so that we wouldn't be breaking any of the COVID rules. And he was telling me how he's been going absolutely crazy watching the coverage, because you miss so much of the football. The Sky games are okay. Most of it is okay, but there is a lot of there's some replays, unnecessary replays of some minor incident, and then you come back to the game and the ball's up the other end. And this is the sort of thing, I've known Ollie since I was 5 years old, and this is the sort of thing that drives him absolutely crazy. And I thought today when I was watching the game that it was quite amusing. There was one bit where they showed Steve Gibson with his mask on for about 30 seconds, and then they cut to Warnock standing on the sidelines for about 30 seconds. And I'm thinking, the game's actually going ahead. You know, they're actually playing football. We're not able to see it. So I was imagining him sitting on his sofa screaming at the television. So, yes, I think his frustrations have spilled over into that rather brilliant piece of writing that you've just played. So well done to him.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
One thing that has come up before, we talked about it on the podcast when it first sort of was rumoured, is the possible Watford moving to a new stadium at the Bushey Hall Golf Club. Now, I'm not against this, because everyone seems to be going on about a home. Oh, Vicarage Road is our home. Well, it is my footballing home. But my mum, she's moved house many times in my life, and I've moved with her on the first few. And home was wherever she was. And I moved away. And I used to go home on weekends from university, and that was because where my mum was. So I don't think this thing that's Vicarage Road, I could easily move home, as I did with my mother, and I do now. My home now is with my wife and my family. But if we all moved together, and we all went together, and we were there as our Watford family, we'd all be at home, wouldn't we? Vicarage Road is not that much of a temple for you, is it, Colin?
Well, it's the first time I went to, you know, obviously I've been going to see Watford for a very long time, and they've been in Vicarage Road since 1922, but equally it hasn't always been their home. They played at Cassio Road. So I understand it completely where you're coming from. I don't feel particularly against it on an emotional level. The things that worry me about it is, one, is it really necessary to build a 30,000-seater stadium, which, unless we're really in the Premier League, won't be full? And that's something that we see around the country, you know, at Derby, Borough, you know, they've got these big modern stadiums which are never full. And I think that is a shame.
None of them are full, Colin.
And then, no, well, obviously not at the moment, but you know what I mean. You play in the second tier, you don't fill your big, spanking, shiny new ground. And that would be the same for us. I like the fact that Vicarage Road, it's very tight to the pitch. It gives the home fans a chance to really have an effect on the result. But on the other hand, of course, it doesn't generate much extra income for us. We've got the gallery now and the view, and we've got the, you know, various executive boxes where you can generate some income. But this new stadium that they're talking about is said to have, you know, a conference centre, various things attached to it that can be used throughout the week. So it would become, and I think as a sports centre as well, which could be used. And so it would be a facility for the town, yeah, in a way, if you like, the Vicarage Road is not. And that might be a good thing. Also, you know, you have to keep moving forwards. The one thing that, I don't know whether this bothers either of you, but it's not in Watford. And it's going to be where Bushey Golf Course is. That's in Bushey. So the station will probably be the Bushey Overground Station, will be the nearest to it. That feels a bit strange, because there's so few now where you're actually embedded in the town centre with the houses around it and so on. And I do really like that, but that's just a sort of nostalgic thing.
Yeah, I think it is a nostalgic thing, because I don't think you can practically build a stadium in any town centre anywhere in the country. It needs space. Even Man United, Old Trafford is way out of Manchester.
I mean, that goes back to the initial thing, doesn't it? And it's about the emotional, nostalgic side of things, of where it is. And, you know, you cannot gloss over the fact that if we are to leave Vicarage Road, it will be a hugely emotional, and yeah, it will be a sad moment, because, you know, I close my eyes and I can think of Vicarage Road in all its various iterations since I've been going. And, you know, we've seen it change, and there are so many memories there with family members, with friends, with all sorts, with good games, bad games. Other events, you know, there's been the concerts, the firework displays, open days, the scoreboard, even the clock. You know, there's so much. The list goes on and on.
But you're listing
on
things, Michael, that have already gone. They've already gone.
But yeah, but they're all part of Vicarage Road, though. So Vicarage Road is still there, and you know,
but are they not just part of your experience? They're not part of Vicarage Road. They're not part of the that's again. It's the experience that's great. It's not the bricks and mortar.
But the constant, of course, is Vicarage Road, and it's that walk, whichever your way into the ground is, you probably do it the same way each and every time, and you stop at the same shop or the same chippy. And there is just something magical about the place for us as Watford fans. And I think, you know, you called it the cathedral, which it is. That's where we've been paying homage for the last, for our Watford supporting careers.
I do like the fact both of you have skirted away from saying how long you've been a Watford fan for.
Too long. Just look at my haircut and you'll know how long, and the grey in my beard. But I think Colin hit upon the point that the reality is, I don't think it's about capacity, because even in the Premier League, you know, you could probably, even when Watford were doing well, you could probably get a ticket somehow for any match in Watford's last stint in the Premier League. So I don't think capacity is a problem. Obviously, the more people coming through the gates, the more money you can make. You know, seeing, you know, the issues Bournemouth are facing, for example, with their ground and it being small and the knock-on effect of that. But I think that Colin's hit the nail on the head in terms of what it can generate for us, because the current regime have done an exceptional job, an extraordinary job, really, of transforming Vicarage Road into something that is a ground that is nice to go at, nice to go to, a good place to watch football. There's not a bad seat in the house, really, if you take out the lower rouse in the corner where you just sit at a wall if you sit in the wrong seat. But it's a very comfortable place to watch football. They've added facilities absolutely everywhere they can, of course, including the brilliant sensory room in the corner. So they're wringing absolutely everything they can out of it at the moment, and it looks good on TV. So it's the whole thing works at the moment. However, you know, we've talked about the importance of Watford getting promoted. And the reality is, the importance of Watford getting promoted, really, because we'll go whether they're in Division 1 or Division 10. So for us, it doesn't really matter. The importance is the legacy, is the future of Watford. And of course, that relies on finance. And the more that Watford and clubs like us can be self-financing, the better. So to have all those facilities attached and as potential revenue streams is hugely, hugely important. And I'd be surprised if that wasn't almost the sole focus. And you think about the land behind the rookery, of course, over the top of the stand, the entrances to the stand was sold, and it isn't owned by the club. You can't develop there. Anyone that's walked down Occupation Road will know the opportunities for developing there are next to none. Anyone who sits in the family stand at the Vicarage Road end, or remembers sitting in the Vicarage Road end, will remember the cramped concourse there. So we've done a brilliant job with the getting the stadium to where it is now, and I love it. I'm lucky enough to go there for the home games at the moment, and I always catch my breath when I go in and think, this is a stunning, beautiful place to watch football. And it wasn't like that 6, 7, 8 years ago, was it? It was dilapidated in parts. You know, we had a condemned stand, the corners were a waste of space. So it is beautiful and it's brilliant, and it's always been our home. But we need to think about, you know, we talked about, you know, Arlo and our kids going to football, and their kids and their kids. We want them to be sat doing their whatever the equivalent of a podcast will be in 50, 60, 100 years.
Yeah.
We want the club to be there for them, to have the memories that we've got. And I think a part of that is securing it financially. And the stadium and what that can deliver is a huge, huge part of that. So that's why I think these plans appear to be gathering pace, and I think most people would recognise that.
I think also what's important is that we don't allow the development and the idea to become a divisive issue. It will on some level, obviously. But what I really, really don't want to have happen is we take our tight little stadium where you feel so close to the action, why people like coming. I think it's a bit like the way they talk about going to the bowling ground in the past. And what I don't want is for us to have a transition where we end a bit. I mean, there have been some really successful developments and then there have been some less successful ones. I think Arsenal fans feel that the Emirates is just not right. It just doesn't feel right when you go there. It's too much of a bowl. It doesn't have enough atmosphere. You're not close enough to the ground. It doesn't have an end. And I think that going, obviously, to the Olympic Stadium hasn't been a great success for the fans. Probably has been a big success financially for the club. It would be nice to think that we could build a stadium that feels like a football stadium rather than just an arena for sport. And I think that whether or not they involve fans in the consultation process, all those things, that's really where you have to be so careful, because football fans are very emotional. They are very nostalgic. They are very attached to their seats, their view, the routine. And I think that as long as it's handled really well and we end up with a football stadium that's recognisably has an end, that's close to the pitch, that is bigger than the current one, has these extra facilities, even maybe has some parking, but is done in consultation with fan groups and so on, then I think it could be a really, really successful process. And it could, as Mike quite rightly says, set us up for the next 100 years, because he's beautifully described the limitations of the Vicarage Road Stadium. And I hadn't really thought about it in those terms before, but he's absolutely right. We've wrung every last square centimetre out of that ground. But if we're going to move forward as a football club in the kind of global footballing climate that we live in now, global sporting climate, that was just generally the way people think is so different from 50 years ago, we probably do need a new modern facility that can take the club forward. So, yeah, he's definitely pushed me more in that direction than the kind of than being a naysayer.
I just looked it up. It is a Watford postcode, WD23. So the only person who really is going to hate this is Jacob and all the boys from WD18. They'll have to whole rebrand just because it's a new postcode.
We're the Orns, you're the Orns. Come on, you Orns!
Yeah, we've got running. We've talked about the running. That's our lovely key cliches that we're going to keep using because Mike's a massive fan of them, aren't you, Michael? Reading at home, we're going to be ahead of that in terms of the other two playing there, that round of games. Don't play until the Saturday. Then Luton, Norwich, Millwall, Brentford and Swansea. That's our running. We all know that. It's embedded into our minds. But we are in such a good position. And I know I said I was 67.1% confident. Opta now tell me, Michael, I should have been, before this game at least, 88% confident. I'm going to push you now, Michael. Give us a percentage of how confident you are for Watford going up.
I've got better, as you may have sort of picked up on, at being a little bit more, removing myself, being a little bit more pragmatic and taking the emotion out of it. I've been quite bullish over the last couple of weeks that Watford are a tremendous football team and they're better than most teams, if not every team in this division. So all things being equal, there is no reason that we can't get, let's say, we've got 6 games left, 3 wins and a draw to probably get us over the line. I would say there's absolutely no reason that this side can't get that.
Percentage.
However, the butterflies at this stage of the season, for me, as a supporter, are non-stop. I'm ashamed, or not ashamed, to admit it's the last thing I think about when I go to bed, and it's the first thing I think about when I wake up, and it's on my mind pretty much the entire day. The permutations, how Watford are going to cope with their next challenge, what could happen, what might happen, what we want to happen, what we don't want to happen. It's still very much all up in the air. Now, Watford are in the driving seat. Norwich will be happy that we dropped a couple of points today. I can hear you in the background, John, on your teeth. Percentage. I'm getting there. We're in a really good position. They still need to win the games that they need to win to get promotion. Promoted sides win a lot of football games. So it's still a massive challenge. So percentage-wise...
Please!
I'm going to say... I don't know. I think 65%.
Okay, 65%. Colin, better, what
about you? Better than the flip of a coin. But
yes,
I feel sick. I feel sick in my stomach, John. I can't tell you. I couldn't agree more. It's the last thing I think about. I go to sleep thinking about whether or not we can sneak past Reading, and maybe if we get a draw against Norwich away, that'll be, you know. And then I wake up in the morning and I immediately check various sort of websites to see if there's any news on injuries or players coming back or what's happened. And the other thing I've done, this is how crazy it's become for me, and I've always been someone that works out the difficult things in my life by talking about them out loud. And I don't know whether that's something that chimes with anybody else, but going for a long walk and being able to, you know, talk things out to yourself out loud so you can hear your thoughts, and I find it very calming, although of course you do look quite mad if you get caught by some stranger walking the other way going, oh, there's a bloke there talking to himself. But I have been doing that a little bit, late night walks before bed, because I found the whole lockdown and never going out, just your day just runs on and on, and then you go to bed, and I find that quite weird. So I like to go out, you know, for a walk, sometimes with Julia or sometimes on my own. And when I go out on my own, I do have to say there's quite a lot of chat about Watford, about kind of stage managing wins in my head, about who scores the goal against Reading, about who, you know, what we do against Luton.
Because it's all left over from you doing your make-believe commentaries at the end of last season.
It could be.
This has been a year since you've done those, and you got well into them. We completed the whole season. Of course, in that season, Watford stayed up. We didn't in the end, don't you remember? But if you got used to that and you're...
Well, yeah, I do. And it's just that it's a way of calming myself down, because it is such... I think I'd be a lot calmer if we'd managed to hang on today. But now suddenly I can feel that nausea starting to grow in my stomach because we've drawn the game today. And then you look at the table and you think, what could happen? It's just awful being a football fan, really, isn't it? I'm quite glad, though, that we didn't, I don't know if I can really say this honestly, but in a way, my fake commentaries kept us up with a Deeney equaliser, I believe it was, against Arsenal, yes, which gave us the point we needed. But actually, I really have enjoyed this season. It's been great watching a Watford side win a lot of games. That's been fun as a supporter. Obviously, it would be more fun if we'd been there, rather than spending the whole season worrying about whether we can get to 38 points, which is a whole different kind of version of being a football fan in the Prem. So I have really enjoyed the season. And in some ways, I'm glad we've had that opportunity to play in the Championship. But I'll only really be glad if we get over the line and get back up into the Premier League. So I must admit, I really enjoyed the 5 years that we spent there.
Yeah, you never know. When we finish this season, we do a top 10 look back on it. It might be a very different beast compared to if we go up or we don't. I do actually feel that if we don't go up in second place, I don't think we'll go up at all.
Oh, John!
Do you know why? Because think about it. If we go down, if we don't, we would have had a massive dip in form. Yeah? And if you have a massive dip in form, your motivation and your ability to get yourself up for two crucial games or three crucial games in the playoffs just feels like that would be the reason why. I'm not saying definite, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you see, if you lose this momentum, you lose this position you're in, I think you're less likely to get through the playoffs. What's the cliche I could use there? The lottery of the playoffs. If you're going into it as win-win-win, you're more likely to get it.
The reality is we're trying to rationalise the unrationalisable, if you like. This is, you know, everything is in play. There's loads of teams that want to stop us going up. We want to go up. There's other teams that want to go up. It's professional sport and it's absolutely beautiful. And these are the reasons, the feelings that we've got now, the butterflies and the talking about it and the nervous energy is why when it all goes well, it feels amazing. And when it doesn't, it feels really bad. And that's why we love it. And it does, you know, at the moment you think, oh God, would you, you know, you sort of jokingly say, oh, would you rather be a QPR fan or stuck in the mid-table, nothing to worry about. You can sort of just enjoy the football. But of course, it's absolute nonsense, isn't it? It's absolutely brilliant that Watford are involved in yet another exciting season. And I say this time and time again, compare the size of the town of Watford to other similar populations, and we have had about a million times much the fun that we are entitled to expect for a club our size. And here we are again with a brilliant group of players and the right end of the table, points clearing in second. Yes, there's going to be twists and turns. Yes, it's going to be gut-wrenching. Yes, I'm going to curse the day I ever started watching football or professional sport. But I wouldn't swap it for absolutely everything. Being a Watford fan is the greatest gift I think I've ever been given, and I'm so glad that we're in the midst of it again. It's what it's all about. Other, you know, the 75% of fans would give their right arm to be in the situation we're in now, and we can sort of talk about the permutations, talk about what might happen. The bottom line is, whatever will be, will be. And it's just a brilliant ride to be on once again as a supporter of this amazing football club. Bring it on, lads. Come on.
Mike, that was just brilliant. I feel amazing now.
And we're going to keep that amazing feeling until Friday when Watford take on Reading at home and see, hey, how this season is going to end and how our heart rates are going to rapidly change or not. Thank you very much, Michael.
Yeah, no problem. Come on, you all.
And thank you, Colin.
Thank you very much, John.
And we'll be back after Watford take on Reading. Come on, you horns!
The Athletic.
You can, of course, subscribe to The Athletic. Yes, that's theathletic.com/rookieend, where you can sign up. There's always a deal. The current deal is $3.99 a month for your first 6 months. That's a 40% discount on the normal subscription. And by doing that, you will get every sports story that matters. All the breaking news, in-depth analysis from the world-renowned team of journalists. And, of course, you can get this podcast ad-free if you subscribe and you listen via the website or via the Athletic app. No adverts whatsoever. Of course, you can keep up to date with all the Watford writing from Adam Leventhal. So to do that, remember, go to theathletic.com/rookieend and sign up for an offer of $3.99 a month. That's if you're in England. And there might be a different offer for you if you're somewhere else in the world. But...
looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.